Thank you, Guido. Now, we had intended to have a round of panel discussion up here. Considering that we nearly used up our time, I would like to give the microphone to the floor immediately. I'm sure there are lots and lots of questions about all these four presentations, and I would, open up the microphone to all of you.
Thank you. Hello. Yeah, I'm Joris Kerman from Schoolnet Namibia. I have an observation and a question in that to the representatives from the East and South America. Yeah? Okay, very close. I'm used to the other one. Okay. The extent of piracy that Guido is referring to as a phenomenon that is actually blocking effective use of free and open source solutions in many parts of Africa, because piracy is so rife that Microsoft continues to get free marketing as it gets pirated all over. To what extent does that impact on the rollout of free and open source solutions in China, in South America, in India? Because I mean, we understand that Bill's got an agenda there. I just would like to know how far piracy is actually being prevented in your parts of the world.
It is what we see in Latin America is that this is this was a problem for the last 3 years and starting to become less of a problem because people can get the software for free without payment, but nowadays their computers don't run it. So if they want to keep using their computers, they usually have to look for alternatives. There is also, despite the fact that licenses are not regarded, they are not regarded by particulars and by very small organizations. But, for instance, supermarkets, department stores, who want to sell computers, they cannot afford to sell them with an unlicensed copy of the software, so they are licensing, they are selling them with some distro of GNU Linux installed. It actually takes, I think the problem is not so much the issue. The main problem now is not the issue of price, that proprietary software can be had for free, but actually the lack of awareness. People don't know there's an alternative. They still don't know it. We are invisible. You talk to you when you say to somebody, "Hey, why are you sending me a Word attachment? Send it to me in another format." They go, "There is another format?" And so I think that's the main issue. I think it's an issue of awareness.
Well, in China, I think the piracy, yeah? Actually, in the dictionary of free software philosophy, there is no words for piracy, just unauthorized use of program software, right? So we in free software community in China deny the use of intellectual property. The copyright is a right, not a property, you know. So this is our understanding. Well, on the government side, well, they have signed the protocol with the WTO, with the organization in Geneva. But, you know, when all the people, or most people, have no conception of a copyright law, the law doesn't take effect. Right. That's why there are so many actions, real actions made by the government. They take the, piracy cities, you know, from the illegal dinners. But then it comes tomorrow, you know, come off tomorrow. So you cannot, the government cannot, you know, arrange so many staffs to take care in the streets, you know. China is so huge. That way doesn't work, you know. So on that side, What we should do is to first we should tell the public media that first to tell them the copyright is first a right, not a property. You cannot do that way to protect the copyrights, you know. But unfortunately, there is no understanding. The same understanding between the government and between the legal the law North scholars. You know, the North scholars inside the North scholar community, they also have the different understandings. So I think regarding to your question, I think it takes at least 5 years to, at least five years, maybe 10, maybe 15, you know, who knows. But at least I think it's a long time to set up the correct understanding to let Chinese people understand that what is copyright. So in this process, what we should do is to develop more free softwares. I always encourage people to transfer the copyrights to Free Software Foundation, to ask them to take care of the free software we developed in China, because we cannot register it legally in China. Another way is most publications made in China are made by the publishing house. These publishing houses are running the business in monopoly, because only some few people, privileged people, can run publishing houses. So when you say copyright protection, it's actually protect the rights of these few people, the privileged people. We deny that way, you know? Okay? So this is my answer.
Okay, the situation in India is a wee bit different. Early when we were discussing, I realized just how different it is. India went through this kind of situation that Africa, Latin America, and China are facing today in terms of piracy. But I think because we got a bit of a jump on everyone, and we didn't really have that much of baggage, what we did is, since we focused largely on students and we educated the students to begin with, they started shaming their parents, saying, "You're using pirated software." Well, I'm not. I refuse to do that. So we are dealing with a generation that eventually took the place that is in place today. This thing that we have been doing has been going on for close to 10 years, and so we have a bit of a head start on it. One thing that we did have to do was when. Actually, the first time I met Volker, I told him about this, was Microsoft was flooding the market and actually encouraging piracy in the form of putting out something known as NFR copies, not for retail copies, which were basically the original packages just stamped NFR and then being sold in the gray market for pennies. And we brought this to the attention of the government, and the government slammed Microsoft pretty heavily with back fines and whatnot, so that practice got stopped fairly quickly. The other thing that happened is that we have this fantastic advertising agency called Microsoft, Microsoft Legal Department. They started suing people left, right, and center for using pirated software, started putting out advertisements about, oh, yeah, you can send your employer to jail. And you just blow the whistle on him and you'll get a nice big reward for that. That worked. That really worked. In a period of 3 months, there's actually a visible dip in Microsoft's turnover in India. And this was just before Linux Bangalore 2001. Part of the boost that we saw all of a sudden, the sudden massive interest from industry, we attributed to Microsoft's campaign. So we really thanked him for this. Really did a good job. I wish they would continue doing it, but they got smart.
Oh, lots of hands. Okay. Now we're beyond the time limit of this panel. I hope you're aware we are now in the dinner break. But of course, if you're willing to continue the discussion, we just go ahead. Shall we start from the beginning and then move to the back? Can I see your hands, please? Ah, okay, yes, please.
My name is Johan. My question is primarily for Hong. If you see the situation for hackers in the West with the new legislation in European Union and so on, it could be interpreted as a great fear of losing control, the corporations losing control, but also the government losing control with the legislation and so on. At the same time, as a proof of the kind of double standard of Western media, they have embraced like the situation with internet in China, how the Chinese government has attempted to control internet spread and so on. So because of this, it seems really strange then, that is Chinese government letting loose hackers, you know, freeing it up. So I wonder how, is this seen as a problem by the Chinese government? Could you develop on this, please?
China is unlike the United States. In the United States, the government is, the force is relatively small. The corporate is strong, right? But in China, the situation is the government is so strong and the corporate force is small, relatively small, you know? So how to think about the actions of the behaviors of the Chinese government is also the focus of the Slashdot and many public media. First, we need to think about this way. Many cyber cafes now, they are most visitors are teenagers right now. There are many video records shows the situation. So this raised a lot of social problems because teenagers they play the games in the cyber cafe over lights, nights and lights, nights, you know, without any limits, and they raise the costs, cost for the parents, also the difficulty for schools to management these students. So to help these students to get off, to grow up, in health way, there should be some laws and regulations to set the restrictions. But now there are some regulations made in China to, for example, prohibit the time. For example, after 10 or 12, you have to close the cyber cafe. This is one. The second is there are mainly sexual, X pictures, transmitted over the internet in China. And I think this is these files are not so good for teenagers. So they can get it later, but not in teenagers. Yeah. So mostly for these two reasons, the Chinese government takes the actions to sell the cyber cafe. Another case of prohibition is the. Some social organizations, because the Chinese government now is very afraid of the people to make some Falun Gong, you know that. So they sell up the sites which transmit these informations because they say they regard this is very dangerous for the whole society. I think before these reasons, Chinese government is okay. I think in most cases, it's okay for you to publish any news. For example, my site, a lot of freedoms on my site. I never met any troubles. So it depends. If you think about to protect the teenagers, this is easy to understand. But what I'm criticizing to the Chinese government is the mechanism of the publishing system, because only few people can publish books or CDs in China. This is unfair. This is unfair. I think everyone should have the freedom to publish the thoughts freely without any such as an approvalment. You know, this is the rights given from our constitution. In our constitution, it's perfect. Says everyone have the freedom to do this, to do that, to do that. But in practice, we don't have the freedom, you know? So this is the real problem we should struggle with. We should win our rights, you know? Nobody can help us. Only we can do that, you know? So we should do that by, you know, by develop our own free software, the free books, people who can develop the free software. When we can realize this is a problem and fight for it, then we can get our freedom. We don't expect the government to pay sympathies to us. No, we don't need that. We need to struggle for ourselves. That's my understanding.
Okay, I'm Jan Mühlig. I have a question actually to all of you. Viruses. We have recently been in Ethiopia to promote free and open source software there, and one of our strongest arguments was that if you use a secure software like Linux or open source software, you don't have to do patch orgies all the time, which is nearly not possible because of limited bandwidth. Now, in how far can this be an argument in other countries? That is, if you use open and free and open source software, you don't have to be afraid of viruses, and you don't have to start your virus scanner every morning.
Let me think something about virus, okay, in China. How we take care of virus? Not most of virus now take effects in Windows platform, right? There are some virus for GNU Linux, but very very few. Most PCs now in China are running Windows. You know, this is a problem. There are some companies in China to develop the antivirus programs. You know, and also they announce the some news in front of the virus take effect, so that there are some protections. But in the future, I think we need a better system to designed for the common users, which is the antivirus. In the Carl's Law's presentation, I'll give my understanding and my work on this.
The way we have addressed this thing is that we don't make claims about Linux being safe from viruses. What we put out over there is that Linux lets you be more aware of what's happening on your system. There's no operating system under the sun which is going to be secure if there's somebody who doesn't know what he's doing behind the wheel. And one of the things that we have been driving home about the fact that many people who are using Windows is that you just cannot find out what's happening on your system. You have no control over your system. In fact, it was Bob Young from Red Hat who actually mentioned this statement, saying that the use of open source software actually puts the control in the hands of the person who's deploying the technology. In closed source software, you run into the problem that the control is in somebody else's hand, and very clearly that person isn't paying attention. Here you are able to check things, and system administrators are able to do the job properly. You are able to, you are safe because somebody is able to check your system, maybe remotely maintain your system if required. We've been bringing up technical issues like this. Now this does work in India because in India we do have a lot of people who are very technical savvy. I mean, that they make their living off that. But it's not a thing that's going to work everywhere. And it doesn't work with everyone. Once you go up several levels higher, if you go to top management, and you try to educate them and saying that Linux will not get viruses, or you try to take an approach of that sort, they say, oh, well, we don't get any viruses on our systems either. Now, there are two things wrong with this. The first thing is, he doesn't even know whether he's got a virus or not. And the second one is, if he actually doesn't have a virus running on his system, it is probably because he's got a Linux system in the back somewhere that's protecting the entire network. So, I mean, we look for openings and we use them. And that works better than trying to make sweeping statements saying that you can't have viruses on Linux.
Hello, my name is Robert Guerra. I'm from Canada, and I do technology assistance for NGOs, both in Central America and most recently in Central Africa. And so I'd like to first make a very quick comment. I think the idea that came out that some sort of collaboration or Programmers Without Borders or something of the sort, that really needs to be pursued further. And so I'd like to discuss with you afterwards, because I think that some sort of solidarity, it's been discussed, as you said, at the World Summit, and I think it's very important. So I just wanted to echo some support for you on that behalf. And the second is a question. I mean, I've been able to see firsthand what it's like to be in a very low connectivity situation. And so I'm just curious, one, what initiatives do you know of to try to get software out to people, not necessarily by the internet, but maybe making copies and distributing that to people, say distributions, because you can program, you don't need to be connected. I mean, there are other things that you can do to get people to learn. So I'm just curious if there's any things in the different jurisdictions that you're all in, you know, what you've done or what you know that's possible, and also education. How is the teaching of open source, how has that been deployed, or how has that been done? Because sometimes the big problem is getting technical support. And so I'm just curious, you know, on those two questions. So thank you.
Okay. The Programmers Without Frontiers thing, yes, certainly needs support. And I think that we should discuss it. And thank you for the support as well and the encouragement. Distributing software is hard because the traditional distribution, the ideal thing would be actually to put it on the back of a magazine like they did in India. But we don't have these magazines in wide circulation. And the best thing would actually be to print out a bunch of CDs. The ideal situation, I think, would not be to just distribute software, but to distribute books, learning materials, and tutorials along with it, so that you have an O'Reilly book or programmers' tutorials, such as Hong Feng's organization has created, lump that together with the software. But then the question is, now, okay, we have that package. How do we get it into the hands of the people who need it? That's the next distribution hurdle. And I think that the only viable thing we're going to have is word of mouth. So even though people don't have connectivity, it's quite a good mechanism for distribution compared to the alternatives. I hope that answers some parts of your question.
Okay, considering that there is another session tonight and we should all get some dinner, I would suggest to take maybe two more questions.
Hi. Guido, you ended with the statement that you thought you'd been particularly negative about the situation in Africa. However, I think what you said was probably the most important aspect of this whole globalization statement. And I think where you were, I think really what you don't often hear in terms of people talking about freedom is social justice. And because it's something, I mean, as far as, you know, the West is concerned, the notion of, or what you often hear in terms of free and open source software is these new austerity measures whereby governments, educational institutions have to find cheaper ways of doing things. Yet the U.S. government budget is running at $1.2 billion a day to fund companies like Raytheon, DynaCorp, who are essentially committing or making money from and profiting from the situation in the underdeveloped world. So I think that's one thing. Although, okay, we often hear Linux free software is great for business, but we really need to be hearing that this movement is about social justice rather than about how great it is for technologists and programs. Another issue another thing I'd like, I'm not really asking a question, I'm ranting. So another thing I think that should be thought about is that it's not just about getting CDs of open source software to people in Africa or wherever. There's ways that these technologies can be used to enable NGOs, civil rights groups, etc., to change the political situation in various parts of the world. So the political implications or involvement of the free software movement could be greater than simply packaging things or selling people another kind of technology.
So I think your point is well taken. I think that the best thing is for us to discuss this offline so that we can go into a deeper discussion. But I think it's worth adding that there's one company that has invested into training developers and supporting training of software programmers and so on in Ghana. They've budgeted about $75 million towards this and are working with the Ghanaian universities. There's only one problem. That company is Microsoft. They are already operating smarter than the opponents. And by the time the rest of the organizations like Red Hat and Co. realize that this is where the battlefield is, Microsoft is already there and winning.
Can I see the hands of people who would still want to make use of the last chance to ask a question in this round? Of course, everyone here on stage is very willing to talk more over dinner. Do we have another statement, question? Okay. Then I thank you all here on the panel, and thank you for your time.